On St. Lawrence Island, the tribal government of Gamble gave one walrus tusk to each household in the community of just under 800. The distribution is meant to provide ivory carvers with a bit of raw material to work with in order to bring in a little extra cash amid the ongoing economic disaster from last spring's poor walrus harvest on the island. KNOM's Zachariah Hughes reports.
Eddie Ungut is president of the Gamble IRA Council. He said over the phone that the native store in Gamble had accumulated a small cache of tusks in the last few years from subsistence hunters exchanging them for fuel, bullets, and other bear necessities. So, the IRA, which also functions as the board for the store, decided to distribute the tusks to families in Gamble, which, Ungut said, definitely helped out. But there's no real way of estimating how much it helped because there's no way to say how much one walrus tusk is worth. Or, says ivory dealer Andrew James, if there is, it's too broad to be useful.
The first thing I'll say is that it varies a lot. To some degree, it depends on the outcome of the carving, what it looks like, the quality, the saleability. So it's such a wide range. It's really hard to say. And of course, this is just speaking to the value, the monetary value, and how it might benefit a person on St. Lawrence Island or on the coast here.
At best, there's a range for estimating the potential monetary value injected into households that received one of the fresh tusks. That is, white ivory from a recently harvested walrus. Fresh tusks sell wholesale at $40 to $50, but since it's illegal for anyone other than Alaskan natives to buy and sell raw tusks, most of the walrus ivory market is made up of carvings, jewelry, and sculpture that blends traditional carving techniques with more modern modes. And what's the high-end potential cash value of a tusk? Nobody could tell me. Some people would offer examples of works from master carvers they'd heard, selling for several thousand dollars, a Rococo cribbage board, for example, or a series of several seals. But everyone insisted there is no hard number.
Yeah, it really is very difficult. I mean, one tusk might render, it's so hard to say that I can't really put a number on it, but I can say that a master carver might be able to work a tusk, whether it's probably like in a full kind of grand piece, thousands of dollars easily. So.
James is a second-generation ivory dealer and has an interesting, intimate perspective on attaching market value to subsistence resources. His family has owned Mariskayas of Nome for decades. The store specializes in artwork from Northwest Alaska, and because Nome is a hub for the communities in Alaska with robust walrus harvests, Mariskayas is functionally a clearinghouse for a large share of the national ivory market. Not all, but a lot of the ivory bound for markets around Alaska and the lower 48 passes through. James emphasizes that searching for a bottom line in ivory carving misses the point. And it's not just that value is added by a carver's labor, it's that you can't estimate ivory's value without the web of cultural practices that it fits within. Right now, the economic disaster on St. Lawrence Island is a cash crisis. The risk of hunger has been mitigated by Savunga's harvest of two bowhead whales this month, as well as 21 tons of canned salmon recently delivered to both communities and a patchwork of other food donations. The food helps a lot. But, says Pearl Mikulski, vice president of Kuwerik's Community Service Division, just because people aren't starving doesn't mean they're not struggling.
There are still several families who are still struggling through this disaster. There have been some that have had their utilities cut off and aren't able to make their loan payments on their homes. And the donations have helped, to meet some of the need, but there's still a great need out on the island for assistance, and agencies are still coordinating and working on solutions.
For the last few months, cash that is usually applied to bills has gone towards food. Efforts by Kuwerik, Anika, ACAT, and other organizations working with local governments on St. Lawrence Island have focused on adjusting the timescale for different cash demands. Paperwork for fuel subsidy applications is being expedited, and mortgage payments through the Bering Straits Housing Authority are getting deferments. But there isn't a blanket solution, and examples of hardship abound. Mikulski said that earlier this month, 17 households in Savunga had their water cut off. By the most conservative estimates, that's over 12% of the town's residents, and likely higher. Those figures aren't available for Gamble because water there isn't piped. Back at Mirskaya's in Nome, Andrew Smart said he too saw some of the effects of the walrus shortage this year.
I definitely have noticed that, not quite as much. And that there can obviously be other factors that contribute to that. But this is surely one of them, the fact that it's that the material is not available.
Ungut stressed that he and others in Gamble are grateful for all the assistance they've gotten from different agencies and individuals. But much of the response to St. Lawrence Island's economic disaster demonstrates the limited capacity at present for handling crashes in subsistence economies. The state's emergency response model is only built to handle natural disasters, and much of the informal aid offered provides relief without replenishing the community's ability to take care of itself. So while tons of canned salmon are appreciated, as an aid measure, it's not the same as the gasoline, bullets, and other equipment that are necessary for subsistence. Groups like Kuwerik and ACAT have worked with local governments on St. Lawrence Island to maximize the efficacy of donations to meet the needs of the community. For example, Mikulski explained that a monetary donation of $5,000 had been distributed among the roughly 150 registered whaling captains. It broke down to about $80 a crew to be used for ammo, the logic being that the money goes further when it helps bring in meat to be shared among the crew, their families, and the community than as one supplement to a recurrent bill. But St. Lawrence Island, more than 100 miles off the Bering Strait coast, isn't free of national or statewide problems. The run on ammunition that started last year has kept many of the high-caliber rounds used in hunting marine mammals from getting to Gamble or Savunga. Ungut says that everything from 270s upward is running out, and while the Gamble native store still has some tusks left, it hasn't gotten any bullets since April. For KNOM in Nome, I'm Zachariah Hughes.